Hello, my name is Ivan. I am an alcoholic. I'm very appreciative to have been asked to speak tonight. Why I say that is not just a generic, like, you know, people say, I'm so grateful to be here, or, you know, that kind of, I really appreciate that I was asked to speak tonight, because sometimes when, I was going to say we, I try to share in the I form of telling stuff, because I don't know what everybody else in AA does, but sometimes I have this experience where, because I've learned to say yes to commitments in AA, when somebody's asked me to speak, I've always said yes, unless I really absolutely cannot do it. But I've just learned to say yes and show up for AA. In that yes, sometimes, you know, in this particular case, it was a bit advanced warning that I was going to speak. Like, you know, 6 years ago, I was asked, no, it was asked, you know, usually I get a text or somebody, hey, could you speak at this meeting I chair tonight? And I'm like, yeah. Or, hey, I'm chairing this thing. This was, you know, I had some advanced notice. Since that notice, I've been through quite a ringer in recovery. I have been through some pretty tumultuous times. And by having this commitment to the yes of speaking at this meeting, that sobriety, not picking up that first drink, that first drug, and that commitment to this, it's like when you got to make the coffee at the meeting, or you got to, you clean, well, I don't think you clean ashtrays anymore, but when you used to clean ashtrays or sweep, you got that commitment. No matter what, it's sitting in the back of your head before that drink. And there's it's a bizarre phenomenon for me that this has been my experience. I was asked to share about some of the magical moments of recovery, and this is one of them for me. Because a week ago, a business that I've worked my rear end off of, I think I can curse in this meeting, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I was just reprimanded upstate New York for cursing at a meeting. Actually, I wasn't reprimanded. This guy reprimanded the whole meeting about it. In God's house, I was like, word? It's like that? You're going to go to God's house? Okay. Last week, I had my business seized that I've worked on for years. And I've been sober for 26 years, and I started a business a few years ago, and we couldn't get out of that happening. Then it happened, and it was really, really rough. And it still is. And this was after finding out some other stuff had gone on with that. And, they don't say financial insecurity leaves us. They say fear of financial insecurity leaves us. And anyhow, I share that because, it's been a little bit of a, it's been a rocky road. But I knew that I was asked to speak tonight, and that that night, which was Wednesday, I called my buddy Rob T., who maybe some of you might know, who I've known for, 20-some years or something, I don't know. And I called him, I just, and I was able to just share honestly with Rob what I was going through, with that the humility asked that I be honest about where I'm at today. The seventh step of AA talks about humility. It doesn't talk about, let me sound humble, let me share some magical thinking about humility. Let me talk about being honest. For me, is the access to being humble, to be able to call a buddy of mine who has seen me in some very successful moments, in between moments, all sorts of things, and to just share as if my life depends on it at 26 years sober, because my life does depend on it, is the definition of humility and the grace of, you know, what God, in which I consider very much these rooms. I'm kind of starting with now. I'm not really going, but I haven't gotten, into my story. But I just wanted to share because For me, when I came to AA, they said it's a day-at-a-time program. And it didn't sound like that, by the way, a lot of people were sharing. It sounded very linear. Like, people would tell their stories like, I was, you know, this, I was born, and then the world did me wrong. I started, you know, I was drinking, I was drugging. Somehow I found AA, or my parents, or somebody threw me in AA. I got sober, and now, dun, 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 you know. And I'm not saying that's how AA is. That's how I perceived a lot of AA sharing when I came into AA. That, okay, you know, I'm 19 years old. I stopped drinking and drugging. The war's over. And now it's dun, 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 and everything's just going to be, you know, I'm going to be on fire. And this is all going to be great. And a lot of things actually right away were. You know, especially things like my body odor. things like the fact that I became employable. The things like I wasn't, you know, nervous to go in a convenience store because my eyes were so red. Like when I used to drink and drug, I used to have this phobia of well-lit stores. So, because I was so bloodshot and like I felt so ashamed of my actual being that I didn't want to walk into a well-lit store. Like any kind of like 7-Eleven. Oh God, like turn the fluorescent down. Like you can see the crud that I am, you know? And so, you know, that left. I started, you know, I developed this thing I never knew before, which was actually how to laugh authentically, you know, with friends in AA, especially about some of the deepest, dark secrets I thought I had. The immediacy of the camaraderie in AA was my first sense of freedom from drugs and alcohol. The sense that I could go out to a diner, not to like an ashram or a yoga class or something, but sit at a diner or sometimes on a stoop smoking a cigarette outside of this meeting back a million years ago and talk about whatever was going on and not have to pick up that first drink or that drug. That was like, holy cow, you know, like it's just, it still is the same exact thing. You know, it's the grace of this program. And then that same first year of my recovery, I found out that my sister was very sick with AIDS and she died pretty quickly. And I was 19 and she was 21. And I can remember being a sober brother to her before she passed away, like looking at her with sober eyes. And I'll never forget the experience. She left New York and went down to Key West, Florida for her last final days. It was winter time in New York and she was a very frail person from her disease. And I went down to visit her just before she passed away. And, you know, I can remember going to meetings in Key West, Florida, so I didn't pick up that first drink or drug because it was very difficult as, you know, a 19-year-old dude watching his, you know, sister pass away. And I can remember going out to, like, the Copa and, like, partying with this, like, dude who was my sister. He was a sober dude who happened to be also my sister's hospice worker. And we'd be out dancing at the Copa. And then I'd go back to her because it was just a day at a time. Like, there was, by me sitting around being miserable with her was not really helping her. Actually, she used to kick me out of the house down in Key West and be like, make excuses and stuff. But, you know, I got to go through that sober. And I remember thinking, not like I'm some champion, like, oh, aren't I great? Like, I got to, like, hey, sis, aren't I so great? It's more like, by the grace of God, I was actually able to look at my sister with sober eyes before she passed away. And that's what this program gave me. And then I want to share that, just to rewind really quick, that I came from the type of drug addiction and alcoholism I shared this in the last meeting I spoke at, which was I smoked pipes inside of pipes to get high. I was that type of drug addict. It's not a metaphor. I actually crushed pipes and smoked them in other pipes when I ran out of money to smoke the resin inside the other pipe. I drank in a way where when I was climbing a mountain in India, far away from the bodegas of Washington Heights where I grew up, I learned how to make alcohol from the sap of trees by fermenting it in my thermos. I was that type of alcoholic. I was the type of alcoholic that would drink rubbing alcohol, that would drink, you know, if you told me, you know, what I drank alcohol like a drug addict. I didn't drink it like a cosmopolitan, amazing, sophisticated dude. I drank for the effect, to get high and to black out. So I share that. I also drank to the point of insanity, which maybe, I hope not a lot of you, but maybe some of you have felt, but I drank to the point where I didn't know how to stop drinking. I didn't know how to stop doing drugs, but I couldn't deal with the way I felt drunk and high anymore. Like, it stopped working for me. Otherwise, I definitely wouldn't be here. I'd be, like, in Colorado starting a weed company. I dream about that all the time, by the way. I'm like, no, yes, yeah, you know. But the fact that, like, it stopped working, but also life wasn't, like, being sober. I couldn't deal with being sober, and I couldn't deal with being drunk. So I thought, I didn't know about AA. This was in 1990. And I didn't know about, like, there was no celebrity rehab that I knew of. There was no stuff going on in the media about AA that I knew of. I just thought, it's over. Like, I was like, the only way to get out of this is this. And I hope to God that a lot of you have never felt the suicidal hell of that type of alcoholism, but I know it. So I decided that I'd go. I was living in upstate New York, and I decided that I'd jump off a bridge. And the only bridge I could find, I actually had to climb up to actually jump off of. Like, you couldn't access it. It was a train bridge that you couldn't get up to without climbing up these pillars. So I climbed up the thing, and I got to the base of it, and I let go with one arm. And just as I was about to let go with the other arm, a car drove back down on the road underneath and went, "Get down from there, you fucking asshole." And I grabbed back on with both. I was like, "Fuck you!" And climbed back down the pillar of the bridge and went after this. It was a brown Pinto, a car they don't make anymore. And I went after this brown Pinto on my bike, like I was going to kick his ass or something. Like I don't know what would have happened if I would have met up with the dude. I would have been like, "Ah!" And he would have been like, "Yo, I just saved your life." And I would have been like, "Oh." Like, I get, yeah, but I was so psychotic, and I share that with you guys because this was a guy who grew up. I went to LaGuardia. I thought, like, you know, I was going to have an art career. I thought, I was in a band. I thought, like, all these amazing things were going to happen, and I was hanging off a bridge in upstate New York by the age, I was 18 at that time when I was suicidal. Completely unknowing how bad I actually was. I was like, this is just the way life is. It's like being a character in a movie not realizing there's a director going, "Cut." Like, I didn't know there was a cut. Like let's do this, you know. So my first experience with that honesty equals humility for me was I called up my father down here in the city. I said, "Dad, I think," I didn't tell my own, you know, that I was suicidal. I just said, "Dad, I think I need some help. I think, you know, upstate, you know, this place I was living." I want to share just really briefly. I lived in a place that the toilet stopped working. So me and my druggy friends took a piece of the carpet and nailed it over the room where the toilet was. So the stench would stop coming into the rest of the house instead of fixing the toilet. So that's how we resolved our issues, right? Cover it up, nail it shut, it doesn't exist anymore. And that is not a metaphor. I can remember being like, "Dudes, we got to do something about the scent in the bathroom. You know, check it out, let's get the carpet, you know." Like, and so we did, you know. So anyhow, like, I called my father. He said, "Come down to the city. I'm going to have you see somebody. I want to see this guy." And I'll never forget, it was over in Union Square. Had a suit and a tie on, and I'm like sitting there. I had dreadlocks. I hadn't shaved. I was 100 pounds, about 40 pounds skinnier than I am. And I looked at this guy, and he started asking me about my drug use and my drinking, and I just lied because I was like, I don't want to offend this guy. Like, he seems so nice. Like, I was like, so I lied, and it was still, through my lying, he was still like, I think you should go to rehab. And I was like, wait, dude, didn't you just hear it's like New York's problem? It's like the reason why I'm so screwed up is my family and my friends and all this stuff. The drinking and the drugging wasn't the issue part here. I thought you were going to like all of a sudden say, you know, supercalifragilistic. And I'd walk out of your office. I'd be like, oh, okay, now life's good. Like, I just messed up. And he suggested rehab. And I was like, holy cow. So that was the first time I had ever experienced this thing of like, oh, wait, there's, you know. I did wind up going to rehab. And in rehab, I was like, wow, you guys are really sick. Yeah, I don't know if any of you ever done that. I was like, wow. I can remember, I'm from Washington Heights. I can remember sitting in the robe in my rehab room with a dude, and I was like, hey man, like, kind of like, what are you in for, you know, like, drugs and drinking, right? But I was like, you know, what are you in for? And I was like, oh, crackhead, you know, from Washington Heights. And I was like, wow, he's really sick. I was a crackhead from Washington Heights. So that's how this disease works, by the way. It is a common thread of, we could literally be sitting next to ourselves and be like, wow, that person really, oof, and has a problem, you know. So I didn't, you know, the most I got out of rehab was up punching a pillow and crying. It was the first time I'd cried, I think, since I was a baby. So, but I was like, this whole powerless thing, the AA thing, that's some brainwashing, that's really weird. They drink coffee and smoke and, you know, whatever it was. So, you know, I came out of rehab in 1989. I decided that, you know, drinking and drugging wasn't my problem, but New York was. So I moved to Boulder, Colorado, and within 24 hours, I was in a blackout. Now, I woke up on February 15th in 1990 in a place in Boulder, Colorado, and I realized wherever you go, there you are. And I got to a meeting. It just so happened that in Boulder, Colorado, there was this thing, a young people's AA meeting on campus. And I say that because it was super helpful for me in that first meeting on February 15th in 1990 to sit there in a room full of people who were 19, 18, 16, 21, you know, similar age and similar kind of like, you know, things going on. And I just said, my name's Ivan and I don't know how to stop drinking and drugging. That's all I said. I didn't, alcoholics, I watched TV shows. I thought I had a visual, I thought I knew what that looked like. Drug addicts, like, was that guy in rehab from Washington Heights. Definitely wasn't me. But all I had to do was surrender and then go out for coffee after the meeting and talk to people. And since February 15th in 1990, I haven't had to have a drink or a drug. Now, I want to share before I end that, so that was 26 years ago. And in those 26 years, the war, you know, with drugs and alcohol, so to speak, was over. And I did, after my sister passed away in my first year of recovery. By the way, I say that with an awareness that my sister didn't pass away in my first year of recovery. My sister passed away in my first year of recovery. I make that distinguishing because so many of us are so narcissistic D-bags that we think, oh, well, this happened somehow magically in my recovery because blah, blah, blah. My sister died of AIDS. It was awful. I stayed sober through it, and I lived life like with a fervor that I realized that this is a gift, that this just living business is a gift. Here's a dude who was hanging off a bridge, like, eh. But to watch her pass away like that, I was like, this life thing is a gift, and I'm going to give and live life like that. And I was lucky to have a lot of support, like people in AA, including this meeting when we first started it back in the day. We were a bunch of crazies. A couple faces, I'm like, yep, you remember. But we just lived and had fun sober, enjoyed our lives sober as to the best of our ability, a day at a time. And so I share that I've been fortunate to be sober and to pursue and live life with a fervor. You know, I've had the opportunity. I've gotten into all sorts of different things. You know, I pursued my dreams and I became a professional for 20-some years in my recovery. I got to live and travel around the world and go to meetings, you know, around the world. But things get difficult sometimes. And my message to anybody is my experience, my strength, is that where I am today is the only sobriety. This is my sobriety right now with you guys sitting in this room. And if I'm full of it today, that's, you know, I'm risking picking up a drink or a drug. Because they say in the preamble, it talks about even those of us with mental, thank you, you know, if we have disorders, which I'm one of us who have those disorders, if we have the capacity to be honest, that's all we need. If we don't, we could be billionaires, no mental disorders, but being lying sacks of shit and probably drink again. So again, the admission of my name's Ivan, I don't have to stop drinking and drugging, was one of my first experiences of being really honest about who I am. And turning that over. And I was asked to share about magical moments, and because things have been a little tumultuous lately, you know, I don't have that. I haven't felt like I've had a, you know, a sense of well-being or humor. I've been up late at night. I've been stressing out with accountants and dealing with stuff. But I haven't picked up the drink. I haven't picked up the drug, and I've done everything that I've always done, which is share honestly with people in my life and ask for help, and pray and meditate. So this last fall, I got married, believe it or not, in recovery. I got married this last year due to, I believe very much so, the fourth step. And you know how in the fourth step, we go over the crap that's not working. And then we say, well, what would work for us? Like what's works for me might not work for you guys. But you are not to judge me, and I am not to judge you about any of that stuff. All I'm supposed to do is know what works for me. And in that, I was able to make a clearing and met the woman of my dreams. And I was able to not just meet her, but have the eyeballs that could see the person who was in front of me. So I got married last year, and we had a miscarriage this past fall. It was really hard on us, and, you know, I don't want to get too, you know, Debbie Downer about it, but she also had complications, and this past winter was really tricky because it kept coming up like, is there something, there's always something wrong with me, right? That's an AA, like we should have a slogan, I'm fucked up. I know this, you don't have to tell me I'm fucked up. Like, so I'm so used to that kind of thinking, and you know, that I'm fucked up, but I was watching my wife, who's not an alcoholic and not in recovery, go through something is wrong with me. And it was a tricky winter. And, you know, anyway, this business thing happened this last week. And I sat with an accountant all morning today, even to the point where I was like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to speak at legal. This shit is so heavy for me right now. And I got home and I was like, honey, like this financial stuff is really, you know, this whole thing, this system. And when I was done with my blabbing of my mouth, she said, I'm pregnant. That was just today before the meeting. So we talk about, yeah. And I mean, she's pregnant. We don't know what's going to happen. But the magical moments where I was immediately able to just see her and stop with all the fear and the, oh my God, and just see her. And I was like, this is one of the magical moments we talk about. Now, had Rob T never gotten the phone call from Ivan G last week when the shit was hitting the fan, and Ivan G, after 26 years, decided, I can't deal with this. I got to go out and have a drink. My business is failing. I got to have a drink. Had that Ivan G happened, his wife probably would have been like, dude, get out of the house. I don't ever want to see you again. But to have the ability to be sober and just see her today and to experience that moment, and I just looked at her, and I was like, I put all the paperwork down. I put everything down, and I was like, I smiled, and I was like, this is, and she goes, but I don't know, what if something happens? And I said, me neither. But I was like, let's go out to dinner later and just celebrate that you're pregnant. And like, many miracles, many magical moments, and the ability to realize that whatever you're going through, meaning us, if we just don't pick up that drink, I know for me, if I just don't pick up the drink, just don't pick up the drug, and I'm honest about what I'm going through, and I apply the principles of the program that we have, amazing things happen. not what I think is. By the way, when she said she was crying and she's like, I have something to tell you, I have something to, and I'm thinking, well, what is it? You got something to talk to me about? Like, what did I do? I'm not cheating on you. Like, what do you got to talk to me about? Like, come on, what? And she's like, well, maybe we should talk about it later after the meeting. I'm like, no, you got something to say? Say it to me now. And she's like, I'm pregnant. I'm like, oh. Right, like our whole lives are not just waiting for the other shoe to drop, that miracles happen and it gets better a day at a time. And with that, I'll end on, if I could say anything, if you guys are young, that I was 19 when I got sober, I'm 45 now, you don't have to ever drink or drug again. And it's pretty incredible. As rocky as it can get, it's also out there, you know, the most amazing things can happen too. So thanks for letting me share.